Thank you for this opportunity to speak, for hosting this occasion. Did anyone show me how to use this? Oh, yeah, okay, good. Yeah, so we can get rid of my title. So that's the rough plan. Sorry. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So I'll be talking about, in fact, this is a bit of a misnomer. Riemann surface means an orientable manifold with a complex structure. What I really mean is a two-dimensional manifold. And yes, I do mean orientable, but I'm not including the complex structure. You can describe these in a number of different ways depending on... Yeah, I'm going to have to resort to the blackboard probably, so I'll erase that. Depending on how much structure you choose to keep or you choose to specify, there is a topological description of them, which just means all you keep is the fact that you have glued together the edges of a polygon with 4G sides. In this case, G is 2, and so we have an octagon, and you glue together the sides, glue this to this and this to this, and what you'll get is a double torus. So G equals 2. I should have made a slide of this. So what you get is something that looks like this. Of course, there is a simpler example, which is a single torus. And there you get that by gluing together the edges of a square, so G equals 1. So you would glue this to this, and all you get is a donut torus, single torus. So all orientable two manifolds can be produced this way, starting with a 4G gon. And they're classified by their fundamental group, which just means equivalence classes of loops under deformation. So for genus G, the fundamental group is gotten by, I'll go back to the previous slide, the genus. So here you had four generators, A1, B1, A2, B2. And there's only one, so all the edges of this are identified to a single point. And there's only one relation which says that if you take the loop around the boundary, you can pull that to a point. You can contract that to a point. So the relation just says that the product of commutators is the identity. That is what you get when you go around the loop, go around the boundary of the 4G gon. And these things can be thought of as a basis of the first homology as well as the generators of the fundamental group. Thinking of them as homology, they're chosen so that their intersection numbers are, each A has intersection number 1 with the next, with the same B, and all the other intersections are 0. You would see that more easily from the previous slide. So the A's A1 intersects B1. It does not intersect A2 or B2. These things can be thought of as smooth, they are smooth manifolds, and all the smooth structures on a compact two-manifold of genus G are equivalent up to diffeomorphism. If you pick one smooth structure, you can find a map, smooth map that pulls it back to any other one. But if you endow them with a complex structure, structure of a complex manifold, they are not equivalent. Even at genus 1, they are not equivalent. There's a parameter that specifies different kinds of tori as complex manifolds. So how you view these things depends on how much structure you want to preserve. And the most basic version is just keeping the complex, just keeping the structure of fundamental group. We can associate topological spaces called moduli spaces to these objects, and they admit different descriptions depending on how much structure you keep on the two manifold. Prototype is the Jacobian, which you can describe in different ways, again depending on how much structure you have kept. If you've just kept the structure of fundamental group, so your surface sigma is just parameterized by its fundamental group, the Jacobian can be described as just, so the fundamental group is pi. Jacobian is the homomorphisms of pi into the unit circle group U1. Just unit complex numbers. So that's just telling you you have to pick an element of U1 for each of the generators of pi. So gives you U1 to the 2G. The relation in this case you get for free because U1 is commutative. Suppose you want to look at this from the point of view of the two-manifold being a smooth manifold, then there's a description of the Jacobian by gauge theory. It's flat U1 connections up to the action of the gauge group. I'll be discussing this later on. A U1 connection just means a one-form. Flat means a closed one-form. I'll be discussing this later on. Gauge group means smooth maps from the surface to U1. And its Lie algebra is just smooth maps, real valued functions on the surface. It turns out that flat connections mod gauge is R to the 2G mod Z to the 2G, which is U1 to the 2G, which is what we had before. If you wanted to describe this from the point of view of holomorphic structures, the Jacobian is identified with the moduli space that classifies holomorphic line bundles over the surface. This is how the Jacobian arises naturally in algebraic geometry. I actually have one. So, it's the space that parameterizes holomorphic line bundles over the Riemann surface with a complex structure. So that's how it arises in algebraic geometry. Whoops, I seem to have gone backwards. So what happens if you replace U1 by a compact non-abelian group, something like SU2 or more generally SUN? The topological description of the Jacobian changes to holomorphisms from the fundamental group to G up to the action of G by conjugation. So equivalence classes up to conjugation of holomorphisms. The smooth description becomes flat G connections up to equivalence under the action of the gauge group. The holomorphic description also has a generalization, and this becomes the moduli space of holomorphic GC bundles over sigma. In fact, for G equals UN, this can be thought of as holomorphic vector bundles of rank N and degree zero over the surface, sigma. This is with an appropriate stability condition from geometric invariant theory. That's the semi-stable. Oops. So these objects arise in a number of different contexts. In gauge theory, they are a prototype for properties of moduli spaces that arise for higher dimensional manifolds, 3 manifolds or 4 manifolds, Donaldson invariants, Seiberg-Witten invariants in dimension 4. So in a way, this whole subject is referred to as Yang-Mills theory, and the baby version is the version in 2 dimensions, 2-dimensional Yang-Mills theory. The topological setting, they provide a natural setting for questions about 2 and 3-dimensional manifolds. So the Kassin invariant is an invariant of 3 manifolds, and it arises as the intersection number of 2 Lagrangian submanifolds in the moduli space of flat connections on a 2-manifold. I should have said that these moduli spaces of flat connections on a 2-manifold are symplectic. Lagrangian submanifold is a submanifold where the symplectic form vanishes. So you count the intersections of those. So you need to know about that moduli, moduli space first. In mathematical physics, they arise from the study of the Yang-Mills equations in 2 dimensions. And in quantum field theory, a lot of things are related to them. For example, Chern-Simons gauge theory. In algebraic geometry, they have interesting properties. One of them is the Ferlinde formula, which is a formula for the dimension of holomorphic sections of a line bundle over the moduli space. This is remarkable because it's usually quite difficult to explicitly determine the number of holomorphic sections, much less a detailed formula in closed form. They are symplectic manifolds, as I mentioned. And you have them as a prototype for symplectic quotient or geometric invariant theory quotient. Atiyah and Bott exhibited these spaces as symplectic quotients. The construction was the space of all connections on the 2-manifold is acted on by the gauge group. The moment map for that action is the curvature. Moment map takes the connection to its curvature, so the symplectic quotient is the space of flat connections, FA equals 0 up to the action of the gauge group. And there's also a way of formulating this as a geometric invariant theory quotient. The prototype is that the symplectic quotient of a compact group action is equivalent to the geometric invariant theory quotient by the complexification. The reference for this is the book by Mumford, Fogarty, and my co-author, Francis Kirwan, Geometric Invariant Theory. So the general... I've introduced many of these objects without explaining them. A connection specifies a way to do parallel transport on a bundle over the two manifold. And assuming the bundle can be trivialized, the bundle is equivalent just to a product, surface crossed with G. But there are a number of different ways to specify the trivialization. The choice of a trivialization is given by the gauge group, which is just smooth maps from the two manifold to the group G. The Lie algebra is just smooth maps to the vector space, the Lie algebra. The gauge group acts on connections by this formula. You take the conjugation of A by G plus G inverse DG. If you were working with an abelian group, then this part is all you would get. This part would be trivial, just A. If you have a closed loop in the surface, a connection determines a holonomy, which is the group element such that the image of parallel transport around the loop, starting at a point in the fiber above gamma of 0, is obtained by multiplying by this group element. If the connection is flat, the curvature is 0, then the parallel transport isn't changed by deformations of the loop. It only depends on the class of the loop as an element of the fundamental group. In fact, the gauge group takes the subspace of flat connections to itself. So you can have an identification of flat connections mod gauge equivalents with representations of the fundamental group mod conjugation. You get from connections to representations via the holonomy. And that is, in fact, an isomorphism. So this space is what we'll denote by curly M. This is our generalization of the Jacobian. So I'll give some examples. Of course, if the two-manifold is the two-sphere, the fundamental group is trivial. Any closed loop can be shrunk to a point, so the moduli space of representations is also just a point. If the two-manifold is a torus, then the fundamental group is generated by the two loops, A and B, and they commute with each other, AB equals BA. So the fundamental group is commutative, and the representation space would just be U1 cross U1. If G is higher than 1, then, as I said, this goes back to the first slide. The fundamental group is no longer commutative. There is one relation. So if you want to specify representation, you have to take elements in the group for which to which the representation sends each of the loops A and B, and you insist that the relation be preserved. And you also have to quotient out the action of the group by conjugation on the space of representation. So if you were looking at representations into U1, you would recover just the Jacobian, U1 to the 2G. If the group is not abelian, say we took the group being U to the UN, even if the fundamental group is commutative, you find that you have to insist that the loops A and B get sent to elements big A and big B, and you have to insist that AB equals BA. Every element of UN is conjugate to a diagonal matrix with unit complex numbers along the diagonal. So if you've diagonalized A, in general, the only elements B which commute with it are diagonal matrices with unit complex number entries. So let's call the space of such elements T. This is the maximal torus of UN. So if A, B are both in the maximal torus, what is left over of the conjugation action? What elements of the group will conjugate T into itself? In general, this is the vial group, the normalizer of T quotiented by T. And for SUN, this is just permutation group on N letters. So you find that the moduli space is T cross T quotiented by the vowel group, this finite group. Even for SU2, you would find that you start off with U1 cross U1, and then you're quotienting by Z2. Quotiented by Z2. In fact, what it looks like is you'd start with one way to say it would be that you would start with your torus being like so. But you wouldn't go all the way around. You wouldn't complete it because of the Z2 action. So this is sometimes referred to as the pillow space. It really is, topologically it's S2, but it has four singularities. Genus 1. More generally, you find that the relation between the images of the generators is no longer automatically satisfied, as it wasn't in example 5 either. And the action of the group by conjugation isn't automatic either. In this case, the moduli space isn't smooth automatically. We often replace it by a smooth analog, which is obtained by cutting out a small disk in the two manifold, requiring that the representation sends the loop around the boundary of the disk, not to the identity element, but to the product of the identity element with a root of unity. A root of unity which generates the nth roots of unity, if you're working with SUN. This moduli space is denoted MND. in the algebraic geometry language, n is the rank of the bundles and d is the degree of the bundles. And this thing is in fact smooth and shares many properties with the more natural space M of representations of the fundamental group. But it's actually smooth, not singular. Connections are just one forms tensored with the Lie algebra. So for U1, connections are simply one form. What is the tangent space to the space of flat connections? Well, the curvature is this object, dA plus Lie bracket of A with itself. If you were working with an abelian group, you would simply get dA. So for an abelian group, the U1 example, the curvature is simply d of the connection. And the condition that FA is equal to 0 translates to d of little a is equal to Lie bracket of big A with little a equals 0. We write that as d sub a of a equals 0. And d sub a is an operator taking Lie algebra valued differential forms to more Lie algebra valued differential forms.
So yes? It's not really the condition FA equals 0, the linearization.
This is the linearization of the, to understand the tangent space, you have to take the linearization of that condition. That's all. And this satisfies the condition that d sub a composed with d sub a equals 0. So it's natural to take cohomology. So the tangent space, in fact, is the kernel of d sub a quotiented by the image of d sub a. We can see from this that the moduli space has a symplectic form, as I said. At the level of the space of all connections, this just comes from the wedge product on differential forms combined with an inner product on the Lie algebra. You can see using Stokes' theorem that the wedge product descends to a skew symmetric pairing on this tangent space vector space. And in fact, this pairing is non-degenerate. If you're working with an abelian group, if you're working with U1, for example, this pairing is simply the cup product on Durham cohomology. This H1 would simply be Durham cohomology for an abelian group. And the pairing, the symplectic form, is simply the cup product. So you find that the moduli space has a symplectic structure. Let's go back to the U1 case. Connection, as I said, is just a one form. And the holonomy is just given by the exponential of the exponential of the integral of the connection around, line integral of the connection around a cycle in the two manifold. This is, you show this because the parallel transport satisfies an ODE, an equation. This basically says the derivative of the log of G is equal to A. So that tells you you just exponentiate and find that this is the formula for the holonomy. And the connection is flat means that dA equals 0. The image of an infinitesimal gauge transformation, which comes from the exponential of an element of the Lie algebra of the gauge group, a function on sigma, is just the connection d phi. So when we take the quotient of the flat connections that arise by those that arise as the image of infinitesimal gauge transformations, we just get closed forms quotiented by exact forms. In Durham cohomology, this means the first cohomology of U1 to the 2G, which is the direct sum of 2G copies of the first cohomology group of U1. So in other words, it's just R to the 2G. If we want to take the quotient not only by gauge transformations which arise as the image of infinitesimal gauge transformations under the exponential map, but by the full gauge group, you have to divide by an additional z to the 2g. And so we get back u1 to the 2g, s1 to the 2g, which was our previous description of the Jacobian. The generators of the cohomology come from the generators for u1. The cohomology of u1 is just generated by the one form. I'll write it as d theta. There's one relation which says d theta wedge d theta equals 0. Since there are no non-zero two forms on the one manifold u1. So the moduli space u1 to the 2g has 2g generators. And the only relations are that these differential forms anti-commute. So cohomology in this case is an exterior algebra of 2G generators of degree 1. Things get more complicated in the general case. The way you get the generators is by looking at what's called the universal bundle. This is a bundle over the moduli space crossed with the 2-manifold. And what it is a bundle such that for any point in the moduli space, the restriction to that point crossed with the 2-manifold is a vector bundle over the 2-manifold. U has a holomorphic structure, and the restriction to x cross sigma also has, that bundle also has a holomorphic structure, and it would be the holomorphic structure parameterized by the point x. We said that curly M parameterizes holomorphic bundles on sigma. It's that, it's the bundle parameterized by the point x. We take a connection A on the universal bundle and decompose polynomials in its curvature, such as trace of curvature to the n, into the product. So you decompose those into products of closed forms on sigma and closed forms on M. And that's how you get generators for cohomology of M. You integrate these forms over cycles in sigma, zero cycle, or there are one cycles in sigma, or there's a two cycle given by the entire Riemann surface. And you integrate those out to produce closed forms on the moduli space, and these represent the generators of the cohomology ring of the moduli space. So these are, in fact, these classes generate the cohomology of the moduli space. That was recognized by Attia and Bott in their 1982 paper. So for example, one important family of classes are the ones that you get just by evaluating these classes at a point in the surface. That's going to give you classes on M. Another important class is the cohomology class of the symplectic form. That in fact comes by integrating over the two cycle that is the entire Riemann surface. So the question was, what are the relations between these? Or what are the intersection numbers? And Witten produced formulas for these intersection numbers. In particular, for example, he obtained formulas for the symplectic volume of the moduli spaces. For SU2, the formulas were discovered before Witten. They were discovered by Simon Donaldson and his student Michael Thaddeus. And in a way, that provided, Witten generalized Thaddeus and Donaldson's description. So for SU2, rank n, rank 2, degree 1, everything boils down to knowing the intersection numbers of all powers of two generators. There is a degree 4 class. This is really the second Chern class of the universal bundle, restricted to a point on the Riemann surface. And F is the symplectic, the Kähler class, the class of the symplectic form. So these intersection numbers are as follows. I write integral over M21 to mean evaluation on the fundamental class of M21 of this collection of classes. And as in David Bridges' talk, exponential just means use the Taylor series for the exponential. The formula for this is like a Riemann zeta function, except for this minus sign. It can in fact be reformulated as a Riemann zeta function. And any classes that are not of the same degree as the dimension of M21 give zero contribution to this sum. And they can be written in terms of irreducible representations of the group. The symplectic volume of any of these moduli spaces is given by what's called the Witten zeta function. It just means the sum over all irreducible representations of the group, 1 over the dimension of the representation to the power 2g minus 2. So for SU2, you get back the formula that was on the previous transparency. What's happened here is that the variable is 2g minus 2. It is not a continuous variable, it's discrete. So it's an evaluation of, I mean, in fact, these are zeta functions evaluated at even numbers, even natural numbers. They're in fact Bernoulli numbers. So how this is proved involves looking at the moduli spaces as symplectic quotients. So Attia and Bott's description was as an infinite dimensional symplectic quotient, the space of all connections quotiented by the gauge group. The moment map is the curvature, and so moduli space is flat connections mod gauge. In fact, we work with a finite dimensional symplectic quotient of a finite dimensional space of flat connections on a punctured Riemann surface by the action of the finite dimensional group. In fact, the way you get to this description is by using reduction in stages. You quotient it. You quotient out by the base gauge group, gauge transformations that are equal to the identity at one specified point, and quotient that out, and then you're left over with a finite dimensional space which still has a symplectic action of a finite dimensional group, which is G. So we were in fact working with the second description. This is what I called the extended moduli space. And we use formulas for intersection numbers in a symplectic quotient in terms of the restriction to the fixed points of the action of a maximal torus of the group. The answer is given in terms of the action of the group on the tangent space at the fixed points, the value of the moment map at the fixed points, and the restriction of differential forms to the fixed point set of the maximal torus action. And by using these methods, we recovered Witten's formulas. So I'll fast forward to the references. So Witten's paper, this is the two-dimensional gauge theories revisited is the paper with the formulas for the intersection numbers in general. And its predecessor was a paper that produced formulas for symplectic volumes, quantum gauge theories in two dimensions. The paper on Yang-Mills theory in two dimensions was Atiyah and Bott, 1983, and my paper with Francis Kirwan appeared 10 years ago. If I have time, I'll just back up to some description of the role that physics plays with all of this. Witten's language was to describe two-dimensional Yang-Mills theory as a physical theory, and so the connections were quantum fields. Flat connections refer to connections which are extrema of an Euler-Lagrange equation. The generators of the cohomology ring are observables, BRST cohomology classes. This is Becci. Hui. Stora. Cuton. In fact, the Q that appeared in David Bridges' talk was the BRST differential. And, oh no, that's not true. It's the equivariant differential. So the differential in equivariant cohomology is Q D sub A plus interior product with a vector field. That was what appeared in David Bridges' talk. And this is the BRST differential. Symplectic volume is the partition function of the quantum field theory, and the intersection numbers are correlation functions of certain of the observables. So I'll stop there.